Kia ora koutou, I'm Russell Brown, and this is the Internet of Awesome Things podcast, brought to you by Spark. So far in this series, we've focused mostly on the possibilities of the Internet of Things for business. But some of the most fascinating IoT opportunities lie in a sector that's not about production and distribution, but keeping us well, healthcare. Like most things in IoT, it's a little bit of the old and a whole lot of the new. You're probably familiar with the idea of medical alarms. Perhaps you or someone in your family has used one. We'll look at how alarms have changed and gone mobile. And we'll look at the way the Internet of Things is shaking up other areas of healthcare, sometimes in ways that highlight the need to update our laws and regulations. Someone whose job it is to stay across all of it is Spark's digital health lead, Dr. Will Reedy, and he's with me now. Kia ora, Will. Welcome. Now, I guess we should start with the question, where does IoT fit in the healthcare landscape? It seems to me that the use cases are actually very broad.
Yeah, they are, Russell, and I think that's one of the exciting opportunities in health, particularly here in New Zealand. When you think about the health system, currently there's about 6,500 providers of healthcare to you and me, whether that's your hospital doctors, your GPs, your community pharmacist, or your, I guess, your physiotherapist and things like that. And I guess there's an element of thinking about health being a disease and illness piece. So you've got a diagnosis and you need some intervention. But there's a massive movement globally, but increasingly in New Zealand, around managing health and wellness. And there's a big application from our perspective as consumers to leverage IoT to manage our health and wellness before we need to touch the health system with a disease or illness. So it has huge applications. It's just making sure that, I guess, the solutions that a lot of people are thinking about actually improve your health outcomes for people like you and me. Essentially, there's growing, I guess, demands in health for evidence that IoT-type solutions make it better for us in terms of our health.
So the implication there is that a lot of the potential actually lies outside what we think of the healthcare system. It's outside clinics and hospitals.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot of opportunities if I think about the inefficiencies of our larger hospital systems here in New Zealand. In terms of IoT, has some applications from a service and administrative point of view. So I really mean asset tracking effectively, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure. And then the other side is, in the community. And there's a general move to try and provide care outside of large hospital facilities. It's cheaper, but it's also better in terms of patient outcomes. And I think the other side of that is there's definitely consumer plays from an IoT perspective. It's not just about the providers providing as a service as well.
Well, let's start with wellness and in particular vulnerable people in the community, because it does seem that their well-being starts out there in the community, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think just to take it up a few levels, ultimately your health and wellness is determined by what we call the social determinants of health. So it's things about what you share with providers of the health system, but it's your education levels, it's your housing, it's your diet, it's your exercise, it's your genetics, interestingly, as well. And we'll talk a little bit about that in the context of IoT today as well. So there's a real piece that says if you just let the providers use IoT solutions, you wouldn't get all the data that ultimately determines how well your eye function from a health and wellness perspective. So there is a whole opportunity in New Zealand for consumers to leverage IoT solutions to maintain their health and wellness. And increasingly, you'll find providers focused in the community, like GPs and community nursing, for example, and aged care as well, with our aging population, that they'll focus on IoT solutions that ultimately provide care in the community to prevent, patients ending up in the hospital system, essentially.
This is also about what's going on in people's homes, whether their homes themselves are healthy?
Yeah, it is. And I think that's where the social determinants of health piece comes in. There's an interesting project that we are involved in from a Spark perspective in the Waikato. It's essentially looking at detecting frailty in older people's homes. And essentially there's sensors being put in 40 homes to look for activity, what I call activities of daily living. So are people sleeping when they should sleep? Are they up and about during the day? Are lights going on? Is it a damp in terms of humidity, and what's the temperature of the house? And this particular company we're working with the DHB down there, Waikato DHB, there's a professor in older person services who believes with those types of sensors and that data being collected in a proactive way, you can apply AI and machine learning and an algorithm to detect that a patient is actually deteriorating, and instead of that patient ultimately, I guess the classic scenario is becoming frail, falling over in the kitchen, breaking their hip, and ending up in the health system, trying to detect those types of declines earlier, and then having a community nurse or a community doctor go and see that particular patient or family in the home and intervene earlier in terms of why things are taking, I guess, a slight downturn in terms of outcomes.
So it's sort of predictive in that sense.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting one because from an IoT perspective, there's a little bit in the health sector around almost an app for that type mentality, which is, hey, here's a cool solution, but it, like I said before, does it drive improved outcomes? And so with that particular research project, there's a provider piece to it, so maybe DHBs who've had a patient in hospital recently, discharged them home, want to improve their management in the 4 or 6 weeks after they've got home to prevent a readmission, because that's a big hospital cost across our health system, is to have that service in place. There's a bit around large aged care providers thinking about it, so the Ryman Health Cares, the MetLife Cares as well. But the other interesting thing with IoT solutions today is the price point's dropped a lot over the last few years. So there's an element of this particular solution I've just talked about being a consumer play, and I guess the best way to describe it is my parents from their 70s, they don't live with me. They're getting increasingly frail. Both retired a couple of years ago. The price point for this potential solution is about $30 a month. And, you know, from my point of view, that kind of peace of mind about making sure they're okay, and $30 a month on top of a mobile phone plan or a broadband plan is something that, you know, I'd think about. And having an app to kind of keep me aware of how they're going, and if they're going downhill a bit, then I can, you know, pop round and check in on them. So we're just trying to work out whether that solution has benefits, and then it's just thinking about who would, you know, provide that service. And I guess there's a number of different players across the New Zealand health sector who could do that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Who will actually run this?
Yeah, that's right. And so that's part of the research project. This professor of, I'm going to use the big word, gerontology, or older persons, is really keen to go, hey, here's a solution that can make a big difference in people recovering or being maintained in their own homes, which is the best place to be. They don't need to be in an aged care environment. They don't need to be back in a hospital environment. Will this make a material difference in terms of the health outcomes of those particular patients? So he's doing all the research to see if it does make a difference, and that really helps with, I guess, making those types of solutions real across New Zealand in particular.
Now, one thing I hear business people say a lot is that IoT ultimately is all about the data. Does that apply in the healthcare field as well?
Yeah, it does. And it comes a little bit back to that social determinants of health piece that I talked about before. So it's just gathering some data. I guess some of these IoT solutions are very specific. So that aged care one I talked about before and frailty is data is just coming off the sensors and the data's been interpreted to decide whether a particular patient is becoming frail. From a wider health and wellness perspective or a disease and illness perspective, that data will augment like an electronic medical record and then help with some decision making about what should happen for you or me as a patient. So it is ultimately about data and that social determinants of health piece that I talked about before. And I think the real power that's coming is taking that data and using it for AI machine learning. I think there's some real exciting opportunities with that moving forward in terms of providing good quality care to people across New Zealand.
Yeah, I read a column you wrote last year about treating a patient who was able to basically tell you a lot by opening up her Apple healthcare kit, and that this was all information that she'd entered in some cases or had been captured, but she controlled it, she was able to show it to you. We haven't really got that in New Zealand, have we?
No, it's quite interesting. Yeah, so that was an experience for me on my clinical day at Middlemore, where a patient from the US had basically downloaded her record from her local hospital, a doctor and her GP effectively in the US, and then augmented that record with her health wearable data and then entered stuff around her allergies and things like that herself. And she unfortunately ended up in the emergency department, and I was asking her about her history and things like that, and she's basically able to show it to me in this case on her iPhone. and wanted to share that information into our systems here in New Zealand. Unfortunately, she couldn't, and it's just a I guess, an information sharing challenge that we have here in New Zealand. But that just highlighted that, you know, I would traditionally, as a doctor, call them patients. I'll call them consumers of healthcare because I think that's where things are going. We're taking ownership of their record, their health and wellness, and using multiple ways of gathering the data to manage their health and wellness. And interestingly, we had the global head of healthcare from Apple down a couple of weeks ago talking to us at Spark, but also to some of our consumers and some of the businesses we provide Spark services to about this particular solution and how we could use it here in New Zealand. And we've got a few health providers quite interested in providing that capability.
I'm getting the impression you think we're off the pace on this stuff.
Yes, I think generally speaking we're off the pace, but I think it's a little bit around... there's an opportunity in that too. I think one of the things that's interesting about healthcare, I said before, I think there's 6,500 or 7,000 providers here in New Zealand on the provider side. It's ultimately a complex system and it's very fragmented. So it's really hard to drive digital technologies into New Zealand health sector. But from a consumer point of view, there's a really good opportunity to disrupt with IoT solutions in healthcare and appeal to, I guess, the consumer-customer end of a health experience. So I guess what I'm really saying is there's a real opportunity, given we are behind, to look at what others have done and, if you like, navigate to the right thing to do for New Zealand.
That's kind of interesting, actually, that it could be healthcare consumers who push the pace on this because they have these solutions.
Yes, I think so. And I think, look, there'd be some of my colleagues in healthcare who don't think that's going to happen, but there's really good evidence in other parts of the world that is happening. And I think one of the ways I think about IoT in particular in healthcare is I think from a health provider perspective, it's going to help transform the business. So you've got data that you otherwise wouldn't have to help deliver better services. But from a consumer perspective, it's going to be disruptive because they'll have a digital experience that some parts of the New Zealand health sector won't. And that'll drive some disruption, I believe.
Do you think there's also a personal and psychological shift here? Because, I mean, I had a blood pressure monitor at home for a while. I hated using it. It made me anxious and stressed. It was almost like there were things I didn't want to know. And yet we're all going to be wearing, you know, not all of us, but a lot of us are going to be wearing these devices that tell us these things.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think, you know, you're coming back to the behavioural aspect, right? So there's an element of, if you think about IoT in isolation, the technology's here, right? It's just the adoption and making sure it improves health outcomes. And I think that's the areas in healthcare in New Zealand that we need to look at. And I think it's also coming down to the type of patient you are. I'm going to use a word called personas. And so some people are interested in managing their health and wellness or managing a chronic disease like diabetes really proactively, and some aren't. So some of these technologies will work, I guess, depending on the type of person that you are and how serious you are about managing your health and wellness, and then managing, I guess, a chronic disease like diabetes. So, yeah, I think there's a little bit of horses for courses, but I guess the opportunity's there for people to leverage these technologies.
And I guess that there are also, I mean, in some other jurisdictions, I think this is already the case where your health insurer takes an interest in the data that you're producing. Are we going to reach a point where health insurance companies can demand that you share your wearables data because it is shareable?
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting discussion. And I think outside of my role at Spark and being a clinician, I lead up a group in the Ministry of Health around thinking about a national electronic health record. And it's an interesting debate because ultimately your record should be a combination of the data that you put in yourself and then the various providers of health in New Zealand health system collecting that data, and you have access to it and they have access to your data. The challenge in New Zealand at the moment is the Health Information Privacy Act is about 25 years old, so it's a little bit behind the times in terms of where digital technologies are going. But ultimately, what we've worked through with consumers in New Zealand is they want to access their data from providers, they want to add their own data to that record, but they want to be able to control who it gets shared with. And so, for example, their data being used for what I would define as commercial purposes, the example you've given is the health insurance industry, but interestingly, pharmaceutical companies are also interested in that data, is they're not really ready to go there. So there's a privacy legislation piece to work through, but actually from a consumer perspective, they're not willing to do that. So that's, I guess, the traditional answer to that type of question. Interestingly, in countries like the US and Canada at the moment, there are disruptive plays where patients can collect their data and then choose to share it with insurance companies. And what they get in return, they are effectively selling the data for research and things like that, is they get reduced insurance premiums, or they get a discount off the next, you know, orthopedic surgeon type consult that they have. So there is some disruption coming in, but ultimately, if I think 20 years into the future, there's going to be patients and their caregivers, because some people, you know, aren't digitally literate, controlling how that access to that record is shared. And so it's going to be an interesting time to watch what happens in that space. But ultimately, if you're trying to be in control of your health and wellness, or the diseases you may have, then you should be in control of how your data is shared.
It strikes me there are also some sort of broader applications. I was talking to someone a little while ago about connected asthma inhalers that deliver data that could be matched against data on air quality from sensors that were there in a smart city setting. So you can actually learn quite a lot from this stuff, can't you?
You can, and that's another example of when I used the word at the start of this discussion, social determinants of health, or words. Essentially, that's the other interesting area here in New Zealand, is getting data from I guess in that particular case councils looking at air quality, connecting it to outbreaks of asthma, i.e. people turning up in emergency departments, and then looking at that particular patient and going, hey, they've got asthma, are they actually compliant with the inhalers that they've got? And you're able to match that data together. And it's another interesting one in terms of the inhaler as well, is compliance with medications is a big challenge in the health sector. So often, as clinicians, we prescribe a certain treatment and we never quite know whether it's picked up. There is increasing connections between we give the patient a prescription and they actually get dispensed it by the local community pharmacy, but we still don't know in that loop whether they've taken the medications. And asthma is a big challenge here in New Zealand, and so having the ability to know that the asthma inhaler is being used in terms of compliance is quite good to help with treatment moving forward, because at the moment it's a little bit blind in that space. You know you've prescribed it, you know they've picked up the inhaler, but you're not sure if they're actually using it.
Now, you mentioned council. There's another angle on council there, isn't there? Are you involved with a food safety project?
Yeah, look, and it's a broader part of healthcare here in New Zealand, and many people know about our public health services, and essentially they're looking for things like outbreaks of, you know, commonly, most recently measles, I guess, but and the flu season at the moment, but also around food poisoning outbreaks, commonly salmonella as an example. And so there's been some work between the public health service and the council to put thermometers into the fridges of restaurants and monitoring for those temperatures and triggering that, hey, you're not keeping, you know, food refrigerated as you should. I guess on the other end of the spectrum, there's been an outbreak of some salmonella food poisoning, and it's a family who's been to this restaurant. Hey, is any evidence that, you know, the fridge wasn't maintained at the right temperature? So those types of connections are being trialled actually within Auckland at the moment.
Now, I can't let you go without talking about your ring. This is a special ring you've got on your hand, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's quite an interesting piece. I think that's the other a really exciting thing around IoT, is you start taking IoT and combining it with other digital technologies like analytics, AI, machine learning, big data. So I'm wearing a ring called the Aura Ring. It's a health wearable, effectively, and it does everything the Apple Watch does. And I actually have an Apple Watch, and it collects, I guess, more detailed, accurate data in my experience. And I use that every day as part of an overall personalised, precision-driven health and wellness plan. And so a little company, startup here in Auckland called Edison Health, essentially they run a program where they take your bloods, do your normal blood tests, biomarkers, and they do your genomic screen as well. And then they come back and essentially, based on that, have a precision-driven plan to maintain your health and wellness. And you have what they call the Edison Protocol. And as part of that, you get given this ring as a health wearable to just monitor how you're progressing with that. So, and then the data that's on my ring, there's an app that I can share with Edison Clinic, who have doctors who specialise in personalised medicine. But every day I get an update on how I've slept, my heart rate variability, vulnerability, and then I get AI, machine-driven data insights into, am I ready for work today? No, I didn't really sleep that well last night. Am I exercising enough? Those types of things. So, interestingly, there's four of us within the Spark exec team involved with this at the moment, and it's a really good example of IoT health wearables combined with other digital technologies to give me an experience around my health and wellness. So mobile phone, application, IoT, data, mapping my genome, and then still that face-to-face piece with precision medicine specialist effect.
So have you actually had a situation where you've phoned in and said, look, I shouldn't come in today? Data says no.
It's the other way around. It's the data's not looking good, and I feed it, and they say, hey, we need to come and have a talk to you about a few things. And so it's quite an interesting piece. So actually, the other thing that they do, which is quite interesting, is they do a 3D body scan every month just to see some of the changes in terms of adopting the program. And then there's a whole cognitive behavioural piece to it as well, which they're interested in how all those things come together to help you perform better at work or being more clear-minded and those types of things. So basically they have the ability to access the data every day, and if there's any issue they'll let me know. And that hasn't happened at the moment. It's been more of a month's view of the data and then having a checkup and then planning what we do for the next month. And I guess the best way I can describe that is by having this data, we started off with an overall health and wellness plan, and every month we were just able to do effectively continuous quality improvement based on that discrete data, particularly from the ring that I'm wearing, to look at what we're going to focus on for the next month to keep, because health and wellness is not a destination, it's a journey, and there's always improvement, so the data helps with that.
Well, you look pretty fit and well to me, but I mean, has it made you feel differently about yourself?
Yeah, it has. I mean, I think the other really interesting thing, which I'll share with you, is my family has a really strong history of ischemic heart disease. My grandparents on my father's side died in the early 50s of heart attacks. My father is in his 70s now, but he had heart attacks in his 50s. So genetically, there's a strong risk of me having a heart attack, admittedly in my 50s. Essentially, from doing this precision medicine testing, I have some genetics that express in a certain way that drive up my risk of having cardiovascular disease. So it's not that I've got high cholesterol or high blood pressure or those things. It actually looks at my genetics. And what I need to do is sleep more, exercise more, drink less coffee, interestingly, and that'll drive down the expression of that gene, which will reduce my risk of having cardiovascular disease. And so essentially the ring helps make sure that I'm exercising, that I'm sleeping enough, and then that's fed into my overall risk profile. And what's actually happened, I've been on the program for about 3 months, is my risk profile's dropped about 30%.
So that's a result. That's interesting. Psychologically, you think, yeah, I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah, and I think the ring, in a funny sort of way, different to the Apple Watch that I'm wearing today, just seems to make me more compliant, if you like, coming back to that behavioural discussion we had before with the program itself. And I guess, in my mind, knowing that data is through my own controls being shared with Edison Health to inform how I'm progressing is quite useful, I think, and it's a good way of getting the right behaviours. I'm not saying it's perfect all the time. They only expect you to, if you like, do your best around health and wellness 80% of the time. So it's all kind of that moderation piece, but you know, massive improvements, cognitive, behaviourally, risk-wise, and definitely feeling healthy and well at the moment.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. Thank you very much, Will. It was fascinating.
Yeah, no problems. Thank you.
Dr. Will Reedy there. I mentioned medical alarms before. Now, someone who knows a lot about those, because he's responsible for a nationwide network of them, is St. John Ambulance Customer Director, Pete Loveridge. Well, welcome, Pete. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Russell.
Let's start with the alarms, because as I noted, that's something that people are familiar with the concept of, but alarms have changed as well, haven't they?
They're kind of changing over time. In New Zealand, we're lucky as St. John to have about 45,000 people have got a medical alarm within their house. And as part of that, it gives them the security and reduces their vulnerability if they have a health issue or an event within their house, that they can contact us directly and then we can respond accordingly. But currently the medical alarms are actually limited to the house. And if you leave the house or go down to the supermarket, they don't work. So we've been working on new solutions to try and ensure that people, when they leave the house, can feel safe and be able to contact us when they need to.
That seems to me like it's both liberating and offers a feeling of security for people.
Yeah, it does. And look, people think, oh, well, why don't they just use their mobile phone or do something like that? But actually, these medical alarms are on them all the time. They wear a pendant, and effectively these pendants last up to about 2 years. So, and if the power goes out, it still works. And we've had numerous occasions when people have been able to get hold of us when others can't. And that's the beauty about it. And with new solutions and new technology, we're trying to take that beyond the gate, as we call it, and ensure that if people are taking their dog for a walk or they're outside or they're doing something, that they can still get hold of us.
Yeah, and this is all happening in the midst of a three-year digital transformation at St John.
Yep.
What are you doing and why?
As you might know, a lot of companies are going through this digital transformation program, and we're one of those. And in reality, it's about us trying to modernise a lot of the things that we do behind the scenes. And a good example is we've got a supporter scheme membership, which we have about 150,000 people who are supporter scheme members. And we can only at the moment post them a letter in order to ask them to renew. We don't send any email. So we're trying to go through this process of trying to get more efficient ways of communicating with customers, but also deliver better innovation to our customers at the same time. I liken digital transformation to going through an episode of Grand Designs. You start at the beginning of the process with a budget, a timeline, and a vision, and then things start getting interesting. Budget extends, the timeline extends, you fire a couple of builders, you have to dig deeper to build the house, you have the weather intervenes, but hopefully at the end of the process you're sitting inside your new house with a vision that you wanted, having a glass of wine and enjoying what you managed to go on and what you managed to accomplish, and just as much as the journey itself.
And your marriage survives.
And your marriage survives, correct.
So how far along this journey are you?
We're about 2 years into it. And we had to dig very deep, so to speak. We've built the kind of infrastructure, and now we're starting to deliver the services. And our first cab off the block was our first aid training. We train about 90,000 people a year in first aid training, and that requires a booking system. And we've gone through digitising that, and then we're going to add other products and other features to that.
What role does the Internet of Things play in this vision?
Yeah, Internet of Things is something that we are very hot on at the moment, and a lot of other companies are as well. I don't call it Internet of Things. I call it the Internet of People's Things. And the reason we call it that is it's about, for me, people, not just the things that you can connect them to. And at St John, we are all about the people. The technology is only an enabler for us to deliver better services and provide better care for people. So for me, it's about Internet of People's Things. And we are at the beginning of our journey, we know kind of where we want to go to, and we want to be able to connect people with lots of products, but we need a kind of centralised place to be able to do that.
How far off are you from, say, having connected devices in the back of ambulances, or is that happening already?
Yeah, ambulances are like their own little separate mobile terminal wandering around now, and the paramedics on the front line now have a digitalised tablet. They can put all the information on there. It's stored. And then in the future, that the information is going to be, can be sent directly to the hospital before they arrive. So the hospital can get information before the patient arrives. And in the future, we hope that information can be passed directly back to their doctor or their GP. So if the doctor comes in the next morning, that they can understand who's been in hospital or what's happened to their patient. So we're on that program as well.
Which brings us to data. And, okay. Doing this series, I keep coming up to this.
Yep.
IoT, it's all about the data. Yep. And I presume you feel the same way.
Yes and no. Data to me is data. It's only data. It depends on what you want to do with that data. And data hides insights, and you have to draw those out. And that's the difficult part, because that's the part that requires you to ask the right questions just as much as storing the data. So, yes, data is important, but it's what you do with that data. We get at what we call people go on about negative, positive, positive, negative, positive, positive, negative, negatives, but it's about a lot of data that's actually just noise, and you have to get through that to get the real gems of information that allow you to deliver a better service for your customers.
So how do you go about that?
You got to store it, and you're going to get some really smart bods to have a look at it. But we've we've had people looking at data and they can't find anything. You've got to ask the right question and then get the right people to be able to look at that. And we get a lot of data we don't use. So, but also at the same time, we've in the ambulance side, which we've created a lot of pathways through better data. Data only gives you one point though, because then you have to go out and you have to convince others that what you've got is valuable in order to get them to change a clinical pathway or something like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, is that you actually need people you work with. You need partners to be along on this journey as well.
Yeah. And look, you know, I know we're sitting opposite each other, but Spark have been a very valuable partner to us in terms of our journey. And if anything, actually, Spark have been encouraging us and pushing us to keep going and keep exploring. And that's all part of that. And you've also got to have people who understand the customer, because you've got to put the customer in the middle. I think a lot of companies tend to put themselves in the middle, and you have to put them in the middle. And we're talking, in my case, about 85-year-old, mainly women who are lonely, sitting in a house. You have to ask yourself, are they going to be able to talk to an Alexa? Are they going to be able to look at a smartwatch? Some of them can't. Some of them don't want to. Some of them don't have any email access. So you have to think about solutions for them. And our data only forms one part of that journey. At the end of it, you have to look at it and go, what human touch, what human thing can we bring that gives them comfort and security?
Yeah, it's a pretty clear point you keep coming back to here. This isn't just a tech rollout.
Correct. I can have lines and lines of suppliers of technology products at my door any time. That's not because I'm arrogant or anything. It's because they want to. I'm more worried about what that technology can bring to my customer and what it can do, but also what can we wrap around that. So that's the important part.
So there's still at least a third of the journey to go.
Yes.
What does that hold? What are you hoping to achieve in the next year or two?
A bit more grey hair, probably. requires us to make careful investments, but it also requires us to make sure that we plan out our journey. We've done a proof of concept with our IoT platform to make sure that actually what we're trying to do kind of works. It's really funny, because you do a proof of concept and then the technical guys actually unpack all the proof of concept. They kind of destroy it and you restart again, which I kind of find weird. But what we're now doing is planning out effectively how we're going to do that. We're selecting our partners and then we're going to start building. We hope to have our IoT platform for our lone worker product up in about a year, and then we're going to rapidly extend that out to our medical alarm customers and various others.
I sort of get the impression that the end result is not going to be something whiz-bang that people look at and go, wow, it's just going to be something that works better.
Yep. And we're a bit like that. Look, you don't really need St John Ambulance until you really, really, really need us. And then we have to work, and we have to work 100% of the time. And we do, on most occasions, do a really good job at helping people. And that for me, is important, that I'd rather have the technology and everything working perfectly when you most need us rather than, oh, it's a little bit dodgy. So we'd rather get that right than rapidly go to market and get it wrong.
Well, I think it kind of defines mission critical. Pete Loveridge, best of luck on your journey to the Internet of People things.
Thank you very much. Pleasure. Thanks, Russell.
Thanks, Pete. Thanks also to Dr. Will Reedy, to all the people who helped get this podcast made, to Gareth Thomas for our theme tune, and to you for joining us. You can subscribe for more of the Internet of Awesome Things at spark.co.nz/IoT podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you've heard, please rate and subscribe to us. We're also keen to hear your thoughts and questions about what we're doing, and you can get hold of us via iot@spark.co.nz. We'll be back soon with more on the wild and interesting world of the Internet of Things. I'm Russell Brown, and I'm looking forward to catching up then, because you and I, we have 20 billion things to talk about. Hello, Russell here. One more thing. If you like this podcast, you might be a starter for my other podcast, Actually Interesting, which is all about AI or artificial intelligence. It's brought to you by Microsoft, and you can find it in the future section of the spin-off website or wherever you found this one. Go look.